gain power from the newly reinvigorated earth until they were once again powerful. Only recently have they begun to show themselves.
I murmured, and they despise the Fae more than ever and plot their destruction.
Worse than that, Cat. They despise humans, too. They loathe both races and want both gone, and the odds aren't quite so against them now. The first time the gods and Fae battled, She-Seers didn't exist. The Fae weren't on our world, and there was no need for them. But now they do exist, and the gods have an enormous advantage they once lacked. Before, they couldn't have seen a Fae standing right next to them if it was glamoured as a human. With She-Seer watchdogs, they can.
I shuddered. Was that where our 12 She-Seers had gone? Abducted by gods? I knew better than to assure him that our She-Seers wouldn't help them. Dole out enough torture. Eventually someone will cooperate. Have you discovered when our order was born? Our roots were a mystery to us. I was fascinated by our origins. I knew the why of it, to protect the Shisadu.
Aye, again, approximately. As you know, after the Unseelie King killed the Queen, Cruz stole his beloved concubine and made the King believe she was dead. In an act of atonement, the King dumped all the formidable power of his dark magic into the Shisadu and cast it out into the world. But as Fae things do, it evolved, and furious with the King, obsessed with him, the dark doppelganger began to stalk the Unseelie King, wreaking havoc wherever it went. The two played a game of cat and mouse for hundreds of thousands of years.
Wait a minute. I have to ask this. We were led to believe the Shisadu was nearly 1 million years old. It's only 500,000?
Depends on how you look at it. The Shisadu is commonly regarded as 1 million years old because it contains the Unseelie King's knowledge from the time he began creating his dark court nearly 1 million years ago, until the time he divested himself of it, over 500,000 years later. Technically, it is only 500,000 years old. Again, this is all only approximate.
I nodded. Go on.
When the King finally managed to capture his dangerous alter ego, roughly 150,000 years ago, he needed a secure place to contain it with guards. Conveniently, there already existed a Sheehan on a planet, rich in magic, laced with the proper elements, the perfect place to entomb it, a place the Seelie would never go because they'd already buried their ancient enemy there and abandoned it.
I gasped. Are you kidding me? Are you saying? I trailed off in disbelief. He cut me a dark smile.
Aye. The Unseelie King paid a visit to our world and hid the Shisadu beneath what is now Arlington Abbey, above the entombed gods, then created the She-Seers as his final Unseelie caste to serve as his watchdogs. He gave your order the power to penetrate Fae glamour, the ability to ward your land against Fae, and various gifts to fight them if they came.
I shook my head, dazed by the thought. The gods have been slumbering beneath our abbey this entire time.
Oh, lass, from the hints I've gathered here and there, your abbey perches atop many powerful things. I'd like to explore the underneath if you'd permit it, soon. We've a mess on our hands and require every advantage we can find.
I nodded. We would find a way to work together.
Back to the timeline. The war between gods and Fae had ravaged the earth. Queen of Eel, who had once been mortal herself, had watched too many planets destroyed. Eventually, and I can't pin that event to a time, she forcibly removed the Fae to a separate realm, fabricating walls by tapping into the power of the Unseelie prison walls, striking a compact with a clan called the Kelter, and trained them as druids to uphold it. Here's where it gets complicated. I'm going to try to explain the realm of Fairy to you in a nutshell. Under the first Queen and Seelie King, Fairy consisted of only the Seelie court, A vast, resplendent land with four distinct kingdoms, with royal houses governing each. Spring, summer, autumn, and winter. Over them all, the queen ruled. When the king left the Seely Queen and became Unseely, he expanded Faerie to hold the enormity of his own domain. Within his kingdom, he constructed the nearly infinite White Mansion and tied it to the truly infinite Hall of All Days. He also fabricated the silvers as a secondary means of travel, initially for his and his concubine's use only. Faerie grew from a single court to an enormous tapestry of connected worlds. Some say the battle we wage here on Earth between mortal and fae is happening on countless other worlds with countless other fae courts connected by this network in a multiplicity of universes.
He saw the look on my face and laughed.
Aye, the thought boggles my mind too. Eventually, the silvers were cursed and the terrain of Faerie became even more complex, as if it wasn't already enough of a mess. But for simplicity, think of Faerie as the light court and the dark court, the Hall of Days, the silvers, and the White Mansion all in one enormous, otherworldly realm. But it's no longer otherworldly. No walls divide us. It exists adjacent to, spilling into our own.
Which was why we desperately needed Mac to figure out how to use her power as Fae Queen, so she could sing those walls back up and restore our world to its normal order without Fae preying on humans. How do you know all this? I asked. This was the kind of history we'd long been seeking.
I sent my clan into the White Mansion, to the king's true library, and had them bring me every book and object of interest they could find. The castle, as you'll soon see, is stuffed with books and bottles and potions and endless artifacts that we've transported to Driacht Keep. Heed me well. Touch none of it. They're not your usual books and bottles and such. Danny can tell you a thing or two about what might be found in the king's collection.
He laughed.
Ask her about the Bura Bura books. But don't ask her about the Crimson Hag. And no matter what you do, once you arrive at my castle, bloody hell, don't open any bottles you might see lying around.
If they're so dangerous, why did you bring them out into our world?
Many might prove useful. Knowledge is power. So is power.
He said dryly.
A controllable Crimson Hag would be a hell of an advantage. I don't sleep, Cat. I study. I learn about myself, about the Fae race. I prepare. The gods and Fae are going to war again, and that battle could well destroy our world. The gods want humans eradicated. The Fae want humans enslaved. It's a lose-lose for us either way.
I said, what does this have to do with Sean? I'm assuming it ties in somehow.
We, too, were made dramatically more powerful by the ancient melody. It was months before the full transformation occurred for me, and yet another few months after that for Sean. I suspect it's moved slowly for the Seely as well. We all change at our own unique pace. I've learned to control what I've become. But Sean, alas, your Sean has not, and he must. He's running out of time.
We arrived at the perimeter of Christian's heavily warded kingdom just before dawn. He'd carved apart 50,000 acres of the highlands for his own, and begun repairing and fortifying the enormous ancient castle he'd christened Driacht Keep. It was in that great, sprawling castle he and Sean lived, in the finished parts of the crumbling ruin. As we soared over a final bend, Christian said,
brace yourself, lass. It's not pretty.
Even prepared, I was stunned by the vision that greeted us as we cleared that final bend, broke through clouds and soared over his kingdom. Everywhere I looked, the earth was black. Gone was the lush greenery, the abundant profusion of foliage and life. beneath an endless bank of low-hanging, dense, rumbling thunderclouds that stretched as far as my eye could see, a churning, crashing, dark grey roof, the earth was burnt and barren, as if it had been charred to a crisp. "What happened here, Christian?" I gasped, clinging more tightly to his shoulders as an icy gust blasted me. It was uncommonly cold, too. The temperature had plummeted 30 to 40 degrees the moment we crossed the harsh line of demarcation.
Months after the song was sung, I took a flight through the highlands, savouring the beauty. I'd only just begun to embrace my wings. I was in a buoyant mood that day and decided to take a stroll, visit our local pub for a wee dram before returning to Castle Kelter. I walked the last few miles, enjoying an unusual gentle hum I felt in the earth. It seemed to be seeping up through the soles of my boots, into my skin, deep into my bones. It felt good, Cat. A beautiful rhythmic vibration enlivening me. I didn't understand what was happening. Didn't realize a dormant part of me was responding to the new magic in the earth, awakening. That I was becoming the Prince of Death, who'd once existed 750,000 years ago. When I strolled into the Cock and Crown that day, 142 people, my people, under Kelter care, exploded into clouds of black dust before my eyes. I killed every single person in that pub, merely by entering it. Had I returned home instead of going for a drink, I'd have killed my entire clan, with the sole exception of Dagus.
I flinched. I'm so sorry.
I've spent the past 2 years scouring tomes from the King's Library, seeking information about what I am, what power I have, and how to use it. It's not as if I have anyone to ask. The Seelie would prefer us dead. Barring that, they want us on their very short leash to be used as weapons. There are no Unseelie left to educate me.
But don't you sort of just know what you can do? My gift was simple. It slammed me in the face every day. Since the song was sung, it had grown even more potent. But thanks to time spent with Castello, I'd learn how to make and hold walls, Kevlar myself in emotional armor. Before I slept each night, I deliberately and carefully walled the world out, creating a blessed fortress of silence for myself, so I might face the next day rejuvenated, strong.
"Not until I try,"
Christian said.
"And often I'm not trying to do anything at all. The power manifests without my consent, like the day I strolled into the pub. Shortly after I imprisoned myself here, your Sean joined me. He's famine. Wherever he walks, the earth dies. Crops wither. The soil goes barren. In time enough, the world would starve. The same thing happened to him that occurred with me. He felt something seeping up from the soil, and as he walked, the earth around him began to die. Unlike me, he hasn't been able to contain that power."
I winced. "It was Sean who destroyed this land?"
"Aye. He tests himself, strolls out to a strip of what blanched green remains when he thinks he's ready to try again. Each time he destroys the earth, he returns angrier, grows more bitter. Anger and bitterness aren't emotions an Unseelie prince can indulge without catastrophic results."
"What is that? Who lives there?" I exclaimed. He'd soared us far to the north as we'd talked, and we now glided directly above the line of demarcation where the perimeter of his blackened kingdom met lush green again. I'd seen something like it before, the abrupt transition where the shades had devoured everything in sight as they'd approached our abbey, but had stopped for reasons unknown. On the charred land to my right stood a small, thatch-roofed crofter's cottage in the midst of lifeless earth. On the grassy side, directly adjacent to it, was another small crofter's cottage of stone that was welcoming and warm, surrounded by neatly tended gardens where flowers bloomed. The cottages were day and night, yin and yang huddled next to each other. Far below us, a couple walked on the grassy side, near the cottage holding hands.
That's Dagus and Chloe. He lives within my wards. She lives just beyond them. I've warded the fuck out of her cottage too, but will not permit her inside my kingdom, lest we inadvertently harm her.
You came into our abbey, yet killed no one. I felt you, Christian. You have it under control.
There is no ward, no charm, no magic solution to harnessing a prince's deadly powers. What I use to master it is the simplest yet often the most elusive thing of all. Love. If I grow angry, if I allow myself any negative emotion at all, I can slip.
He said quietly.
The key to success is never being bitter, never being angry, never coveting, never succumbing to any kind of desire that contains darkness. You're Sean, lass. He's consumed by it.
I blinked back a swift burn of tears. I'd wondered, so many nights in my private garden of silence at the end of each day, where my childhood love had gone. Why he'd never texted or called. He'd simply walked away, without another word. It had pained me, almost beyond enduring. Yet all this time, Sean had been holed up in isolation, warded away from the world, trying to learn to control the unseelie monster he'd become. All this time, I'd thought he'd left me because he didn't want me, didn't want us. And so I'd given him his privacy. I'd not texted or called either. Stung, hurt, McLaughlin stubborn and unyielding. But that wasn't why he'd left at all. Sometimes, despite the open window I have into everyone else's emotions, I can be blind and foolish about my own. Take me to him, Christian.
I hoped you'd say that.
27. Crawling in my skin. These wounds, they will not heal. I lost one of my birds this morning. His name was Charles James Aubrey. He was 23. He hung himself in my flat on DeSoto after only 9 days off the streets. I just dropped in on him 3 days ago, and even I'd been fooled. But I've seen many come and go. And I've learned a bit about their ways. Sometimes, right before they check out, they seem better than ever, well-adjusted. Not giddy or tip-you-off kind of happy, but misleadingly balanced. And I wonder about that borrowed grace. Wonder about the enormous amount of pain they must be suffering to finally feel okay, only when they decide to opt out of this crazy, beautiful world. You don't see it coming. Not even me. Although, I've learned to watch for an unexpected, suspicious peace. He left a note.
I didn't ask to be born.
I wish I had more time. I have a theory about depression. I think it comes from a shift in the chemicals in our brains, because stress, trauma, and grief deplete our happy juice. Disrupt the delicate, necessary balance and make the world go flat around us. Get scary and monochrome, too heavy to bear. And once you're there, with depleted brain chemicals and flat colours, you're too depressed to fight your way out. I think exercise is a way to increase endorphins, rebalance the brain, and I wonder if my extreme velocity and constant motion feed my brain undiluted happy juice, constantly perking me up. I wonder if I figured out, say, the right blend of cortisol, 5-HTP and Bacopa, maybe a few other nootropics plus lots of fun physical activity and loads of kindness and sunshine, then gave those people one happy, stress-free year without any responsibility, maybe I could turn their world around. I cut him down and held him. He was still warm. I may have missed him by an hour. He must have died shortly after dawn, lingered to watch one more sunrise. If so, that slayed me, because it meant he still had joy somewhere inside. If only someone had been able to reach and nurture it. I wrapped him in a blanket and took him to a cemetery I use for the lost ones. I don't have a lot of time, but I always bury them. And I always do something for them. Dublin goes dispassionately on. This beautiful, terrifying, packed with limitless possibility and peril chronic town chug-a-chugs on, a locomotive barreling down the tracks, with neither deviation in schedule nor pause for fallen. They vanish, unnoticed, unsung. I blow the horn for them. Yank that cable down and let her rip. I graffitied his name on an underpass in three vibrant shades of neon, 10 feet tall, telling the world that Charles James Aubrey was here. It may have been brief, but by God, he was here and will be remembered. If only by me. He couldn't stand the pain, and I couldn't save him from it. I went straight to Chester's after painting the underpass, and dashed up the stairs to Riordan's office when I didn't find him below with the workers. I'd texted earlier, telling him I was fine and I'd be by around 10. He's not a man you don't text when he tells you to. He'll come looking for you, and he'll be pissed. I wasn't in the mood to repair my door again. I still had to fix the elevator, and I hadn't vacuumed in weeks. Shazam hair was everywhere. When the darkened glass panel whisked silently aside, I stalked across the glass floor that always makes me feel suspended in space, flung myself into the chair in front of his desk, kicked my feet over the side, and told him what I'd decided late last night, or rather near dawn this morning, with neither preface nor preamble. I think I'm becoming a hunter. I leaned back and waited for him to deny it. I didn't actually think it myself. It was absurdly far-fetched. I was, however, quite certain I would turn completely black at some point. Still, the vision I'd had at the club last night seemed like, I don't know, an invitation of sorts. And I wanted to bounce my worst-case scenario off someone who would laugh and tell me that was ridiculous. I wasn't turning into one of those icy black demons with eyes like gates to hell, no matter how benign it had appeared in my vision, sailing along next to me. To hear him say he knew a spell, a ward, or a charm that would make my deadly skin go away because, by God, Riordan knew everything. Criminy, he was beautiful this morning. Tall and dark, freshly showered and shaved, smelling good. Looking powerful and ridiculous behind that stuffy desk. He belongs on a battlefield, like me. He said flatly,
"You think?"
I stiffened. That wasn't the right answer. Riordan's version of duh. "What do you mean, duh? You didn't even know I'd stabbed a hunter." He leaned back in his chair and folded his arms behind his head. The sleeves of his shirt were rolled up to his elbows, his forearms strong, scarred, silver cuff glinting. I know Riordan well. The fine muscles in his face were too tight. He was pissed about something. Extremely.
"I knew you stabbed the hunter. I read every paper you wrote. And your book. All editions. Your footnotes needed work. I didn't, however..."
He growled.
"No, your bloody hand turned black afterward. You neglected to mention that."
"It was no one's business but mine. And how do you know it now? And why was he taking this so seriously? I just told him I thought I was turning into one of those enormous dragons Jane used to shoot at all the time, and I used to try to kill, species unknown, and he'd said only, 'You think?' It was an absurd theory. I was small. Hunters were enormous. If nothing else, I lacked sufficient mass."
"Cat told me that part."
"Cat?" I said disbelievingly. "When? What do you guys do? Sit around and talk about me or something?"
"This morning when I texted her,"
he said tightly.
"I told her you were turning black and she knew all about it. Lore wasn't watching you every moment. He did the best he could. Christian was supposed to relieve him sometimes and... he's still not fucking returning my calls. Do you know how infuriating it is to have to find out the details of your life from someone else?
Do you know how infuriating it is to not even be able to find out the details of your life? I countered just as irritably. At least you can butt in and text my friends. I don't have Lore's number, or Casteo's, or Fade's, I said, working myself into a snit. And if I did, I continued, eyes flashing, you'd have told them not to tell me a bloody thing, just to keep me wandering around, forever stymied by the great big mystery of RK bloody the fuck S. And just what the hell do the K and S stand for, anyway?
Killian. St. James.
Huh? Riordan just told me his name? I rolled it silently over my tongue. Riordan Killian St. James. I liked it. It was polished, urbane as the man he pretended to be. Killian was like killing, sharp-edged and intriguing. St. James was lofty, old money, blue blood and power. Oh, now that's just a pile of bull, I said crossly. That's so bloody Irish, and you're not. How could you possibly have an Irish name? It wasn't even close to anything I'd ever come up with, and that made me even madder. I did something then so incredibly bizarre and plebeian and juvenile that I couldn't even wrap my brain around it. I thought, Danny Killian St. James. It had a nice ring to it. Wait, what?
It wasn't my first,
he said,
though the initials are the same. It's the one I took when I made my home here. We changed our names to fit the clime, the time. I've kept that one a while.
So you talked to Kat. She told you my hand turned black, and from that mere fact alone, you deduced I was turning into a hunter. At least I'd had the vision to go on, the ready, you fly too. Although I couldn't decide if it implied I would actually physically transform into a hunter or just turn completely black, become lethal to the touch, yet receive the small consolation prize of being able to astral project into the stars on occasion. Superhero rules are pretty obscure. He inclined his head in one of those imperious nods. Some people might have thought it had infected me and I was dying, I told him. I'd briefly entertained the notion myself. It hadn't resonated in my gut, and although I prize my brain, I value my gut just as highly. A lot of times more.
I'm not some people.
You're not even people.
There is that. Are you so sure you are?
I shot him a sharp look. You don't think I am. And why didn't I know you met me before I thought we met? His gaze shuddered. You wanted rules? Fine, I'm making one. One of ours, which means we both obey it. Full disclosure, or don't bloody well interfere in my life. Don't even try to be a part of it. Don't you think? I threw his own words back at him. It's time we cut everything loose. I might be gone soon, soaring around in space. A hunter. You might never see me again. I bet then you'll be sorry you didn't talk to me. I didn't say, I bet then you'll be sorry you went away for 2 years and wasted them. But I wanted to. Except people have to want to stay with you, and he clearly hadn't. He jerked and snarled.
I'll bloody well be sorry I didn't do more than that with you, Danny. I wanted to make love to you. I wanted to fuck you. I wanted to cut loose with you like I've never been able to cut loose with a woman in my entire existence. I wanted to explore every ounce of that brilliant mind and every inch of that powerful body of yours. Learn your deepest desires. Be the one to rock your goddamn world. Watch the great Danny O'Malley abandon herself to passion. See her in one place she's never conflicted and revel in being alive.
Holy hell, he felt it too.
The nine have no equals,
he said. Eyes glittering with crimson fire.
We always hold back. An eternity of being careful. It's not our nature to be restrained. Especially not when we fuck.
I'd never thought about it that way. Like me, he could break people without even meaning to. Restrained sex. Oxymoron any way you looked at it. To have so much inside you, all coiled up and ready to explode, waiting, always waiting for someone to come along who can see it, who can handle it, and never being able to let it out? I know what it feels like. Pain. A pain that, unlike the others I've mastered, I've never been able to figure out how to stop feeling. I don't know that you can. It's life trying to happen.
A woman like you is a once-in-an-eternity opportunity. Every bloody one of us was waiting to see what you'd become when you grew up. I told you, you're a fucking tsunami. I knew it even then. You didn't smell like other people.
The Nine had been watching me, waiting to see what kind of woman I'd become.
And Christ, you ran on pure adrenaline, unchecked aggression and sky-fucking-high dreams. The most fearless thing I'd ever seen. God damn it, Danny. Everything I've done since the day I met you has been about keeping you alive. To never cage you or take away your choices. To see you rise, watch you become.
What? A bloody hunter? I demanded.
I had no fucking idea that might happen.
He snarled.
If I'd known your hand had turned black, I would have factored that into my linchpin theories about you and drawn conclusions sooner. It might have affected my actions, changed them. You withheld a critical piece of information.
He was angry about it, and not even trying to hide it. His face no longer cool and composed, but savage, fangs distending. As if you don't all the time, I flung, on the verge of vibrating, melting into the slipstream without even meaning to. Papers on his desk gusted, his hair ruffled.
Breathe,
he ordered.
Get control of yourself.
Practice the preach. Your fangs are showing. But I closed my eyes and took a moment to center myself. Then my eyes flew open and I said, What the hell, Raiden? What if I actually become a hunter? My voice broke on the last word, pain lacing it. Was I just one of those people who never got to belong? In this world, but not of it? Never, ever, once, really, of it? He was silent a long moment, as if trying to decide what to say. A muscle worked in his jaw. Finally, he said carefully,
If you become a hunter, perhaps you won't care about this world, or those of us in it anymore. Perhaps it's what you're meant to be. Your journey takes you somewhere else.
You don't believe in fate. I rejected flatly. You believe in you.
Ah, Stardust. I've seen too many patterns unfold during my existence that hold a startling, cohesive symmetry. There's a plan, and it's way the fuck bigger than you and me. The universe has an agenda. For a long time, everything I did was in defiance of it. Then, I began trying to protect that agenda, so I could at least have some small say in the details.
I said irritably, I'd miss you, and I definitely still care about our world. I love our world. It's always my second priority. Survival is first.
I'd like to believe that. But maybe some people are destined for larger things. And, according to you, you didn't miss me at all for the past 2 years. I hardly see you missing me now, if you become something even less human.
Perhaps it's not inevitable. Perhaps I can make it go away. I ignored his other comments. I still didn't know where he'd gone or why, and I was never telling him a single thing I missed about him until he told me that.
Perhaps. Time will tell. In the meantime, once again, we've got a world to save. Perhaps we'll need a hunter to save it.
Perhaps, I countered, we'll only need a little bit of a hunter's power, and perhaps I can turn it off once we fix things and be normal again.
Again implies you once were that way. You weren't. And there's nothing in this world you'd hate more than being normal.
He was right about that. What would you do if you were me?
I'd keep an open mind. Consider all possibilities. That's all any of us can do. Life is a box you don't get to open all at once. You can touch it, pick it up, shake it even, but you can only guess at the contents. There's a hole in the top of the box where things come out, on their own timetable, on their own terms. You think you have things figured out?
He said, with a note of bitterness in his voice.
Only to find you saw everything completely wrong, didn't understand a bloody bit of it. So, you wait to see what pops out next, and you go on living in the meantime.
Sound advice. Pretty much what I'd concluded, without the box metaphor. What's on the agenda today, boss?
Riordan. Let's just be you and me for a while. No role-playing, no superheroes. Just a man and a woman who admire each other and drive each other bugfuck crazy. Spending time together. Let's make that rule number two.
What's rule number one? And who gets to make it? I demanded. He met my gaze and held it a long moment. Behind those remote silver eyes, storms rushed and swirled. Immense, thunderous storms. He was upset. That worried me. One of my rules goes something like this. If an unseelie prince says run, run. Another is, if Riordan looks upset, be afraid. Be very, very afraid. But me and him, we don't do fear. We plunge back into our worlds and wait for the next thing to pop out of the box, prepared to face it.
I'll leave that one up to you,
he said finally.
You get to decide our number one rule.
His gaze added,
make it a good one. I'll never break it.
We exchanged a smile then, unlike any we'd shared before, an unguarded expression of warmth and respect. Unfortunately, it did nothing at all to chase away the storms from either of our eyes. 28. A momentary lapse of reason that binds a life for life. Christian's castle was atmospheric, to say the least. It sprawled atop a high cliff, towering over the vales below, affording a clear view of potential invaders. Though it was morning, not one speck of sunlight penetrated the bank of gloomy thunderclouds overhead. That smothering, low-hanging ceiling of slate stretched from horizon to horizon, as far as the eye could see. The only illumination was one lightning that sizzled and crackled high above, causing the clouds to briefly flicker a slightly paler shade of depression. The castle was vast, rambling across a mighty bluff, dropping sharply away on three sides. On the fourth, the wild crashing sea slammed into the base of the towering dark bluff. The only way in was a winding path gouged into the side of the cliff. Once one topped that path, a long road with stone walls on each side led to a perimeter stone wall that enclosed the entire estate, broken only by a mighty drawbridge that was up and heavily barred. Then the winding streets of the keep proper began. Tall stone towers stretched up into the dense grey ceiling, vanishing within. The castle soared and ducked, towered, then slumped to low garrison-like buildings. A full two-thirds of it was crumbling, yielding to the passage of time. The remaining third had been restored. The ocean frothed and foamed beyond it, crashing into rocks far below. The entire estate was a study in angry slates, broody greys, and dark, tension-filled shadows, broken only by that one intermittent lightning flickering high above. We landed atop a low turret, and I moved away from him, hugging myself to stay warm, my hair whipping about my head in the wild, salty breeze. Why is it so cold and gloomy here? I had to speak loudly to be heard over the wind. Is it because of you?
Sean, we affect the climate with our mood. His mood has been foul for a long time. The sun hasn't shone on my keep since a few weeks after his arrival. What grass remains for him to test himself on is pale and sparse. He said last week if he runs out of grass within my kingdom, he's leaving.
I sucked in a sharp breath. To go where? Christian shrugged.
I've no idea, lass, and he wouldn't say. He's not speaking to me right now. Perhaps into Faerie, or the Unseelie Kingdom, perhaps into Silvers and beyond. We can't lose him. We have to get him back somehow.
As my teeth began to chatter from the cold, he said,
But let's get you inside, lass. It's warm within. I'll see you fed and set you on the path to Shaun.
I shivered as I picked my way up crumbling dusty stone stairs. During a hasty meal of cheese and bread, Christian had told me a bit more about Shaun, concluding with directions on how to find him. He felt it best I approach alone, as Shaun could feel Christian as he drew near, and grew even angrier.
Then the bloody clouds consumed the entire castle.
Inside and out, he'd told me.
It's not pleasant.
As I'd wandered the eccentric keep, crammed with towering stacks of ancient books and manuscripts, chests and bottles, Raiden had texted repeatedly, and I texted back, answering his questions about Danny, wanting desperately to call him and find out what was going on. But I had my own battle here, and from what Christian had told me, it was going to be a difficult, if not terrifying one. I paused to catch my breath before topping the last few rounds of the spiraling stone staircase. Shaun had retreated to the ruined part of the castle, the far tower where, Christian told me, he was wont to loom, a brooding dark shadow, staring out over the sea. Unlike the rest of the castle, which Christian kept toasty warm somehow, it was freezing here. I tugged the woolen throw Christian had given me more snugly around my shoulders as I finished my climb. Then only a door remained between me and Shaun. 2 long years plus change had passed since I'd last seen him. I paused again and closed my eyes as Raiden's words from long ago floated up in my mind. Words I hadn't heeded. And suddenly, I was back in his office of glass, staring down at Shaun, and Raiden was saying,
If you don't tell Shaun that Cruz is fucking you while you sleep, it will destroy what you have with him more certainly than any job in my club could. That, down there.
He pointed to Shaun, serving a drink to a pretty, nearly naked Seelie.
Is a bump in the road, a test of temptation and fidelity. If your Shaun loves you, he will pass it with flying colors. Cruz is a test of your fucking soul.
He'd also said,
Your god may love soulmates, but man does not. Such a couple is vulnerable, particularly if they are fool enough to let the world see how shiny and happy they are. Their risk rises tenfold during times of war. There are 2 courses a couple in such circumstances can chart. Go deep into the country and hide as far from humanity as possible, hoping like hell nobody finds them, because the world will tear them apart, or sink up to their necks in the stench and filth and corruption of their war-torn existence. See things for what they are. Drop your blinders and raise the sewer to eye level. Admit you're swimming in shit. If you don't acknowledge the turd hurtling down the drain toward you, you can't dodge it. You have to face every challenge together, because the world will tear you apart.
Right on both counts, Raiden, I thought with a sad smile. I should have listened. But I'd been ashamed, afraid. It had been utterly against my will, but I'd enjoyed it. What does a woman do with that? I'd told myself over the years that it wasn't my fault. I'd been used at the hands of the most powerful fey prince in existence. Who could make me think I was feeling anything? Still, the shame. I'd never wanted another man inside me but Sean, yet I'd hungered for Cruz in a way I'd never hungered for Sean. Even if that was an illusion he'd forced upon me, I could still taste the memory of it. And I hated Cruz for that. I knew why Sean was angry. I knew why he was bitter. We know each other's every gesture, every twitch, pain, fear, hope, and dream. A deception lived and breathed between us, and it had taken on a dark, rapacious life of its own. If I was to have any hope at all of helping him become the man I believed he could be, he wasn't the only one that needed to face his demons today. Inhaling sharply, I squared my shoulders and pushed open the door, praying there was validity to the adage, "And the truth will set you free."
"Why have you come, Kat?"
Sean said, in a low, angry voice without turning. He stood on the far side of the circular stone chamber, framed in a tall, narrow opening cut into the stone, the wind gusting waist-length black hair around his body, ruffling the feathers of enormous raven wings.
"Leave. Now. There's nothing for you here."
If I'd not seen Christian first and felt his heart, Sean would have terrified me. My love was once a handsome, rugged fisherman, toiling on the ocean, having turned his muscled from pulling nets all day back on the mighty, deadly O'Banion clan. With his black hair, dark eyes, and quick, easy smiles, I'd learned to trust him in that frightened, wide-open state in which I'd spent my earliest years. Of all the people I'd met, his had been the only heart that rang true to me, void of complicity. Despite his appearance, nearly identical to Christian and Cruz, he didn't frighten me now. I could feel him. I was close enough. He was lost within, drifting in a land far more barren and wasted than what spread so ugly and black beyond these castle walls. His sociopathic cousin, Rocky O'Banion's credo, inscribed on the back of a watch of gold and diamonds he always wore, had been, "Isolate the mark." He'd sworn that every man and woman, regardless of education, pedigree, or wealth, would ultimately fall prey to it, that we couldn't stand alone. Yet Sean had been perched in dangerous isolation for 2 years and hadn't succumbed. That gave me hope. "I disagree," I said, moving farther into the icy room. "You're here."
"I may be, but Sean is not,"
he said bitterly.
"He's been gone a long time."
"I don't believe you." When he whirled in a storm of dark feathers and flashing alien eyes, I inhaled sharply, but stood my ground. "My love," I thought. "Oh, my love, I'm so sorry." Both born into powerful Irish crime families, we'd spent our entire lives running from the darkness of our own blood. But the darkness had found him. I hazed the vision of my eyes, the better to focus the gaze of my heart.
"Get out, Kat. I don't want you here. You're nothing to me,"
he said coldly.
"Less than nothing. And don't bloody do that to me. You don't want to feel it. Leave now, and I'll let you live."
If I was nothing, why then was the image frozen in his heart of the day I'd insisted he accept me and my child without knowing? The day I'd erected an impenetrable wall between us and shut him out? I blurted in a swift rush of words, because I knew I'd never get it out otherwise, that truth. That terrible, divisive truth that had been eating me alive inside and cut the ties that bound us. "I lied, Sean. I lied to you. Cruz came to me while I slept. He raped me in my dreams. Ray might be his." I began to weep the instant it was out. I felt as if an enormous pressure, constantly crushing me, had vanished from my soul. I wept with relief. I wept with sorrow. I wept with confliction because I love Rey. I love her with all my heart, and she might be my enemy's child. What do you do with that? Sean jerked violently, shuddering from head to toe with the intensity of his emotion. Raven-veined ice exploded in the room, sheeting the floor, climbing the stone walls, dripping from the ceiling in dark crystal stalactites. His voice was deafening when he exploded.
Cruz raped?
He broke off, unable to finish the sentence, jerking violently, hands fisting.
That son of a bitch! That son of a fucking...
He trailed off, snarling, body straining from the effort to control himself. With a mere emotion, he turned the room into a cave of dark ice. I shivered, crying silently, but stood my ground. He wouldn't ice me, not my Sean.
Fuck, Kat!
He cried then.
Fuck! Why didn't you tell me?
I'm so sorry, I said, voice breaking. I wanted to tell you, but I was so ashamed. And the longer I didn't tell you, the longer it went on, the less possible it became. I didn't say that I felt complicit. I couldn't begin to explain how trapped it had made me feel. Not without telling him why, that I'd also felt pleasure from it. You hadn't begun to change. You were a man. He was a prince. How could you have battled Cruz? What if he'd killed you?
I thought she was Castellos.
His voice broke.
I thought you cheated on me with one of the nine.
Oh, no, Sean. I was pregnant before that. Didn't you do the math?
She could have been early.
She wasn't. Castello taught me to shut out the pain of the world. He taught me to become strong, but never. I broke off, shaking my head violently. Castello's heart belongs to someone else. Not me. Never me. And my heart has always belonged to you. I love you, Sean. It's always been you. Don't you remember what we promised each other?
That was then. Before I became the monster I am... You'd never have pledged such a troth to what I've become. I'm what raped you.
If you weaken, I'll be strong, I said through tears. It was the first line of the vow we'd taken together when we were young, the day we'd run off to Paradise Point by the lighthouse, dressed up as if it were our wedding day, had our own ceremony, pledging our hearts and souls together. Too much passion burns. Tenderness fuses. We'd always been tender with each other, and that passion we shared was rich and good and strong. Until a fey prince had shattered it with lust inflated by illusion, and made me compare. Never compare. The moment you do, you destroy what gifts you possess, and your gifts are precious. Let me be strong for you now. He spun then, gave me his back, and turned to stare out at the stormy lashing sea.
It's too late, Kat. Far too late for that.
I refused to believe that. If you get lost, I'll be your way home, I said softly.
Go away. I'm not the man you used to know. There's nothing left of him, and I have no bloody home.
I shook my head as I wiped tears from my cheeks. Sean was not staying lost within his ugly, horrible place, in this ugly, horrible land. Nor was he leaving alone to go God knew where. The cat I'd once been would have quailed before such a creature. That looked so much like Cruz. The woman I'd been before Castello wouldn't have been able to handle the waves of pain, misery and self-loathing gusting from Sean's soul, slamming into me, icy spears piercing my heart, trying to destroy my hope. But I'd learned. Locked beneath Chester's by Riordan, trapped with one of the nine, I'd learned what I needed to know in order to fix the problem I'd made by failing to heed Riordan's warnings in the first place. I wasn't the woman I'd once been. And I was angry now, too. Raiden had so clearly warned me that the world destroyed soulmates. I'd not only refused to listen, I'd helped the world do it. I'd been the one to divide us. And I would, by God, put us back together. If you despair, I'll bring you joy, I said, speaking the third line of our vows. Do you hear me, Sean O'Banion? Joy. You're going to feel it again. You don't believe it now, but you will. We took those vows for a reason. We made them up together, carefully paring it down to what was most important to us. We did it because we knew the taint of our own blood was strong. We knew one day we might slip. We knew how much pressure they put on us to be like them. How treacherous and sly they were. How they liked to tempt, ridicule, and bully us. We vowed to never let one another fall without helping each other stand back up and find our way. You're going to stand back up. You're going to fight what's been done to you. I'm going to fight it with you, with everything I've got. I vow that I will never again give you anything but truth. And one day you will take those vows with me again. And one day you will say that last line again. And you'll bloody well mean it. And that's what we'll use to contain the darkness within you.
It's not that simple, Cat,
he growled.
You have no bloody clue what kind of monster you're dealing with.
You say that to the woman who was raped by one like you, and flown here by another like you. I know exactly what you are. My Sean in trouble. But not alone. Never alone again.
It's not possible. I've tried. Bloody hell, have I tried? I'm not Christian. I'm not that strong. He came from a line of pure hearts. I come from a corrupt bloodline.
Christian had clan who loved him, who'd fought for him, fought alongside him. Sean had no one. His entire family was dead, and I'd let him slip away into darkness, the thing I'd vowed never to do. When had I stopped believing in us? I knew the answer to that. When I'd begun to brick and mortar a wall of shame and lies between us. When Raiden had warned me that we were in peril. Argue for your limitations, you make them yours. Together we're going to argue for your possibilities. It's entirely possible Rey is your child, if you still want that paternity test. That might give me a foothold. Get him turned back toward the world again. And perhaps the test would be positive for Sean, and perhaps it would be inconclusive if she were Cruz's. Perhaps whatever passed as Fae DNA didn't register, and inconclusive wasn't quite so troubling. Human hearts are funny that way. We let ourselves believe gentle lies. But it would be his choice this time, not me keeping the truth from him. A tremor ran through his body, ruffling his wings. He said nothing for a long time. Then...
What are the odds?
50-50, I told him flatly, stung by the thought he believed I might have taken other lovers. There's never been anyone but you, and against my will, him. You've never met Rey, Sean. You should. She's lovely, with your hair and eyes. Fun-filled, good and loving... That doesn't sound like Cruz to me. Still, she has one of two fathers, you or him. Either way, she has an unseely prince for a da. Cruz is dead, I hoped. You're not. Wouldn't you rather my daughter, and quite possibly yours as well, grow up knowing you as her father, not him? He turned then and looked at me, with a glimmer of emotion in his eyes. And I inhaled sharply. Deep within, I could feel a faint, weak stirring of hope. For 2 long years, no one had come for him. Perhaps he thought I knew where he was, what he was doing, and had chosen not to come. I had no idea where you were or what had happened to you, I said, fanning the flame of that hope. I thought you didn't care anymore. I thought you'd left because you despised me. I missed you, Sean. God, I missed you more than words can say. I closed my eyes